Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
Welcome to JS on Politics, our weekly look at what's happening in Wisconsin politics. We have a very special show today because we're previewing the debate tonight among the Republican presidential candidates, all 17 of them, more or less, because only 10 are in the main debate. But let's start with that and our guest today, Charles Franklin, the director of the Market University Law School poll, to help us set the stage for Scott Walker tonight and what he's facing. So, Charles, first, you know, this is a very large number of candidates. They've split it into sort of the junior varsity and the varsity debates. You know, what do you make of how they've set this up and sort of the challenges the organizers have in finding the right mix of people on stage and the right approach to an informative debate?
Yeah, I think you can have a lot of sympathy for anybody trying to organize a debate with 17 candidates. It seems quite unworkable on the face of it. I think there's reasonable dispute about using the polling to separate out the top 10 from the bottom 7, though the polling has been quite clear about who is towards the bottom and who's towards the top. Other people have proposed alternative schemes, 2 debates with half in each debate. But really, that train has left the station. As it stands, getting through 10 candidates in 2 hours will still be a challenge. If you just do the math, that leaves well under 10 minutes per candidate when you allow for questions and follow-ups and so on. So it's going to be a very tight schedule. It really is going to put a lot of strain on the candidates to make their points pretty concisely.
All right. And the person, they're organizing the stage tonight with the person at the top of the polls, Donald Trump, in the middle, and he'll be flanked by Scott Walker and former Florida Governor Jeb Bush. Now, what do you make of Donald Trump, who, if we were sitting here 3 months ago, we probably wouldn't be saying he's necessarily in the debate, let alone the top, you know, leader in the polls right now?
That's certainly true. Prior to his announcement that he would officially get in the race, he was typically polling at just 2 or 3 percentage points in the polls that asked about him, and many polls left him out altogether. Since he got into the race, and especially since he has started to dominate media coverage over the last few weeks, we've seen him go up to the low to mid or even upper 20s in national polling and lead some of the statewide polls as well. In that sense, his polling numbers have certainly earned him that place in center stage. And that despite a great deal of skepticism about whether he's actually a serious contender for the nomination. I think in one sense tonight will really help show whether he belongs on the stage with these other candidates. If it fails to differentiate him from the others, then I think that's further proof that he's earned his position here. If, on the other hand, he doesn't look like he's ready to talk about the issues seriously with the other candidates, or if the other candidates have criticisms of him, then that'll also be revealing. So I think no matter which way the debate goes, we're in a position to learn more about Donald Trump, but also about all the other candidates from tonight seeing them on the same stage.
Right. And Scott Walker, of course, is our main interest, at least for Wisconsin voters, and to see how he does out there. He's generally coming in third or maybe sometimes second in the national polls. What significance do you attach to that? Is that a good spot for him right now, or certainly it's better than being at the bottom, but I mean, how do you think he's positioned himself, and does he have room to grow?
I think he's positioned himself very well. Most of the national polling, almost all of it, has seen him in the top 3 or 4 candidates nationwide. He's continued to lead in Iowa in virtually every poll there for the last several months, maybe with one exception. And so he's in a very good position in the top tier, but not necessarily first place. First place means everybody else is looking to take you down some. So I think he's in a good position there. Governor Walker has a history of well-controlled debate appearances in which he stays on message, presents the arguments the way he wants to present them. That'll be a challenge to any questioner who would like to move him off that practice. And it'll be a very interesting moment to see if there is any back and forth between the candidates. How does Governor Walker respond to that in this context?
All right. And looking forward, so after the debate's over, do you typically ever see any sort of, you know, bounce or movement in the polls from this? Or is that only a case if someone really, really messes up that you would see a big shift in the polls?
Debate bounces are more rare than I think popular notions would have it. Many debates serve to reinforce what people already think about the candidates, either positively or negatively, and therefore have usually pretty little effect. When one candidate does spectacularly well, or perhaps more often spectacularly poorly, then we see a bounce up or more commonly down, as that does affect campaigns. One important point here, though, is this is so early still in the process. And these candidates, even though they're in the top 10, remain remarkably little known in the country as a whole. So there is more room here for a candidate to either profit and move up or suffer and move down from tonight's debate.
All right. Well, we thank you for your thoughts on the debate tonight, and we really appreciate it. Thank you.
Thanks for having me.
And I want to say we're blessed to have a wonderful group of Republicans running for president. Sometimes people ask me what makes me different. Well, I've fought and I've won. I didn't just win 3 elections in 4 years in a blue state running for governor. We've actually won on the big issues. We balanced our budget. We cut taxes. We defunded Planned Parenthood long before these videos came out. And we did so, and we went forward in a way and took on the big government special interest and put the power back in the hands of the people. If we could do it in Wisconsin, it's not too late there, and it's certainly not too late for America. I ask for your vote.
That was Governor Walker from earlier this week in New Hampshire, where he participated in a candidate forum, a little bit different than the stakes and the format tonight in the debate. We're joined now by Daniel Bice, our Watchdog columnist, and Washington Bureau Chief Craig Gilbert is joining us from Washington. He'll be covering the debate tonight. Let's start, guys, with, you know, the governor's over time participated in numerous other debates. There's nothing of this sort of nature with so many candidates, but how, Dan, what's your general sense of how he's performed in front of the cameras in these situations?
If I had to use one word, I'd say he was workmanlike. He did what he was supposed to do, and as you said, it's going to be very different because they were almost always one-on-one debates. There were about a half dozen of them as governor, and there were 3 or 4 more as county executive candidate. And he was the lead. He was ahead in the polls in each instance. And so he didn't have to do anything dramatic. He just had to hold serve, and that's basically what he did over the years in those debates. He had a certain message that he wanted to communicate, and he stayed on message, didn't vary from it at all, whether he was attacked or whether it was just a straightforward discussion.
Yeah, so Craig, Dan's word was workmanlike. Do you have one for us for how the governor has generally performed in past debates?
I think workmanlike's a good word, and I think also the comparison is apt in terms of what Dan said about him being in the lead in these other races. The debates we're talking about in his races for governor, he didn't have to throw the long ball. And he doesn't have to throw the long ball in this debate. I mean, he obviously wants to do well. He doesn't want to screw up. But he doesn't have the same urgency to kind of go for it that some of the candidates who are further down in the polls and have a real need to kind of generate attention and generate some traction. So I think they can afford to play it safer than a lot of the other people in the Republican field. It'll be interesting to see how safe they choose to play it.
Yeah, I mean, one of the interesting things is that, I mean, the governor might not have to throw the long ball, but maybe someone at the very bottom has to do a little more to generate interest, to create waves. Do you guys see that the governor is potentially the recipient of some of the barbs and attacks and things, or is he, you know, sort of in the middle, healthy spot for him to be right now?
Well, you know, all of the pre-debate attention has been focused on Donald Trump, and if you're going to attack, he's the one who's the easiest one to attack because he's getting all the attention. It would seem a little odd to go after Scott Walker unless, you know, he says something that somebody disagrees with in particular. So I mean, his role is to play it safe tonight. He's got to avoid making any sort of mistakes, and it's going to be similar to how he did in the New Hampshire debate, or whether it's a debate or not a debate the other night on Monday night, where he just went through his talking points and pretty much gave his stump speech twice on camera, and you'll probably see very similar themes when he's on camera tonight.
Yeah. Craig, do you think, I mean, from the forum the other night, what struck me was that they all mostly agree on a lot of the things mentioned, you know, defunding Planned Parenthood, some of these other topics. Where do the candidates distinguish themselves tonight? Or maybe from this, what does Scott Walker do to distinguish himself from the others?
Part of it's stylistic, and I think in the case of Governor Walker, you know, he's not, there's still a lot of Republicans out there who don't know him very well. And so the campaign thinks that the recall story is a great story for people that haven't heard it before. I think you'll probably hear a little bit more about it tonight because I think they still think they're introducing him to a lot of people. Getting back for a moment, though, to the question of the attacks, I think what's really going to be interesting is if Governor Walker is the recipient of an attack from someone else on that stage, what's the nature of that attack? I mean, Donald Trump, his attack recently against Governor Walker was on his record as governor of Wisconsin, and I thought Walker, kind of his rejoinder, was a pretty effective one in the context of a Republican primary contest, which was, oh, you're just rehashing the Democratic talking points against me. I mean, nobody would dispute the fact that Scott Walker had a very conservative record, has had a very conservative record as governor. So attacking that record is kind of a mixed message to a conservative Republican audience. Where I think he's more vulnerable in a Republican contest is this perception that he's flopped on some issues, and there's been some inconsistencies on immigration and other things. That's a message that I think if there is going to be an attack on him, I think it'll be along those lines, not his record as governor.
There was a minor stumble on Monday where he went through his thing that he came into office and there was a $3.6 billion budget deficit, and he dealt with that. And the person then asked, how big a surplus do you have now? Well, as everybody in Wisconsin knows, that's a huge debate, and there's a structural deficit in front of him. And so he didn't respond very well, and he said, well, let's talk about the rainy day fund. He also was asked about climate change, a topic that he's not addressed very much. And instead of dealing with what his position was on climate change, he immediately shifted to Obama and attacked him. So those were two, I thought, interesting situations where it didn't look like these were the types of questions he was expecting. And in one case, he dodged the answer. And in the second one, he decided to go on the attack against Obama. He also twice referred to what a quality field there is of other candidates. And he'll probably say something that along those lines again tonight.
All right, one related question. So in the past, the governor has been in these mostly one-on-one debates. It's usually been just one or two or three. This is certainly the governor sees himself in this for the long haul in a sequence of, you know, up to a dozen or so debates. Does that raise the stakes for this one or lower the stakes for this one in that there's going to be lots of chances to talk to voters? Craig, do you have a thought on that?
Yeah, I think it means that he doesn't have to put it all into this one debate. I think they are going to be conservative in their approach to the debate. That's every signal he's sent. He's talked about not engaging with the other candidates. He obviously has to be equipped to handle anything that's thrown at him, but his response, you know, has been not to kind of rebut the attacks on a personal level, but just, you know, kind of patiently field the criticism and deal with it. I think that's his style. I think, you know, whether that style can serve him throughout this entire process is another question. I think there'll come a point in this race where he'll have to be more aggressive in his personal style. I just don't think we're quite at that point yet.
His if you watch all of his debates over the last 8 years, his style is very consistent in debates. He's very, very calm. He's not rattled by anything, and he stays on message. And I don't see any reason for that to change tonight.
All right, let me ask you the same question to both of you. This is to sort of in the prediction range or realm of things, but try to complete this sentence. So for Scott Walker, it was a good debate tonight for Scott Walker if
he makes no mistakes. I mean, I think it's like a big game of dodgeball, and, you know, one person usually or two people get taken out during these debates.
It's usually like the smallest guy, you know, who can't.
Well, Rick Perry's kind of not a small guy, yeah. And he screwed up in the debates last year. Herman Cain had his problems 4 years ago. So, but I think it's sort of a defensive strategy. He doesn't want to make mistakes while at the same time staying on message. The thing is, he does have a tendency to do these indirect attacks, and he referred to himself as a fresh face on in the New Hampshire debate or whatever you want to call it. But and there's this implicit contrast between him and Jeb Bush when he says, "I'm a fresh face." Apparently, he's not. It'll be interesting to see if anybody engages on that. But I think it'll be a success if he's not the lead in the story in the New York Times on Friday.
All right, Friday. Greg, so Dan gave us two things. Don't be the lead in the New York Times and don't mess up. So what? It's a good debate.
Well,
for
that was
Scott
mine. I was going to say it's a success if he's not the headline, because if he is the headline, it's most likely not going to be for good reasons. And just also to kind of add something else Dan said, which is that this style of his of kind of, promoting himself, and the flip side of that is kind of an implicit attack on his opponents. It's Dan mentioned the fresh face. It's the anti-Washington thing, which is really aimed also at all the senators and former senators in the race and the fighters and winners. I'm the only one that's a fighter and a winner, and the implication is that everybody else out there who's won elections doesn't fight for anything, and everybody else out there who's a fighter hasn't won anything. So it's clever because it's hard to respond to, because he's not naming you. If you're out there and you're saying, "Oh, how can you say that about me?" it's hard to rebut because he hasn't even directed it at you, and you have to kind of own the criticism before you can respond to it. It'll be interesting to see in this debate whether any of these people on stage kind of personalize those themes of Scott Walker as an attack for them to rebut.
All right. Well, thanks, guys. There'll be a lot more about this tomorrow to chew over tomorrow morning. So thanks for joining us.
Well, I've won 3 elections in 4 years, the last 2 of which I won after a lot of people were upset on the Democrat side of things. And we did it by making big, bold actions and got results because of that. I think in the end, I'd love to go against whether it's Hillary Clinton or Joe Biden. I'm a new, fresh face versus a name from the past. I'm someone from outside of Washington with a proven track record. And most of all, I've gotten things done in a blue state.
That was another clip of Governor Scott Walker from earlier this week. As we continue our preview of tonight's debate, we're joined now by Tom Kircher, a PolitiFact Wisconsin reporter. We're going to run through some of the governor's more recent talking points, things that we probably think he'll say tonight,
right,
and how we've rated them. So let's start with this first claim. The $3.6 billion deficit we inherited has turned into more than a $500 million surplus. And at the time, we rated that half true.
Yeah, when the governor first came into office, he did face a shortfall in the budget of $3.6 billion. But when he entered the second budget, the surplus that he put together was $177 million, not the $500 million he claimed.
All right, here's another claim he's been talking about lately, and this quote is, "Our pension system is the only one in the country that's 100% funded." And again, at the time, we rated it true.
This was back in 2013 when we rated it true. Wisconsin was the only state that had put enough funds aside for future pensions. We did make a check the other day, and it looks like South Dakota may have entered those ranks as well.
Right, so that's when we may re-rate that statement now that times have changed. Okay, graduation and third grade reading scores are up in the state since I took office, and we rated that mostly true.
Yeah, the numbers were both up, as he indicated, but we found that some of the credit, at least, was due to administrations prior to his.
Okay. All right. This is a popular one. Thanks to the Act 10 collective bargaining law that took effect 4 years ago, ACT scores in Wisconsin, quote, are now second best in the country for states where more than half the kids take the exam. We rated that mostly false.
In this case, the Wisconsin's rank on that college entrance exam did rise to second after the Act 10 law took effect. But we found there was really no indication that Act 10 had anything to do with that. Secondly, Wisconsin's rank went up only because Iowa's went down.
Right, so Wisconsin's scores are basically flat, and there's this other shuffling among other states that put them in second. Okay, once our blueprint for prosperity is signed into law, we will have delivered $2 billion in tax relief. This is an older one, but that $2 billion number still stands, and we rated that true.
Yeah, back in 2014, through a combination of mostly income tax rate cuts and property tax cuts, the $2 billion had been achieved.
All right. And next one is that Walker said because of his action, Wisconsin property taxes today are lower than they were 4 years ago, and we rated that mostly true.
That's right. Again, the numbers back him up. The taxes are down, but we did find that property values had a role in that as well, not just actions that he took.
Right, and we should know that's not everybody. We always hear from the readers, my taxes are right up. Well, this is an aggregate figure and representation for across the state.
Exactly.
All right, and finally, a very recent one that we rated. Since I took office, Wisconsin now has the second highest health care quality ranking in the country, and we rated that half true.
Wisconsin did come in second in a federal agency's ranking of healthcare quality, but we found that Wisconsin for years has been either first or second for the most part, and so it would be hard for him to claim credit for the rating being number two now.
All right. That's where we'll leave it from the PolitiFact ratings. We would invite you guys who are tuning in now to tune in tonight at JS Online and follow along during the debate. We'll have a live blog with commentary from our various reporters and PolitiFact. And then join us tomorrow, Friday, at noon for our regular time. We'll do the JS on Politics show and do a detailed recap of the debate. How did Governor Scott Walker do? Did he take a swing at Donald Trump? All those questions will be answered. And if we're part of that, please leave us some comments tonight on that blog, because we'll work on some reader comments in tomorrow's show. Thank you very much.
Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen, brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.